leave. In continuation, the Imam says, he was subsequently asked, what if one were to say, were it not for Allah granting me X's help, I would have perished. So somebody was in the presence of the Imam when the Imam made this statement. So he asked, if I were to say the following, would it be shirk? Will it be hidden polytheism? If I say that Allah granted me this person's help and therefore I was saved. The Imam replied, there is nothing wrong with saying things like this. Right, so by making a certain alteration in our statement, we can avoid this hidden polytheism. Instead of saying, this person did this for me, we can say, Allah saved me by means of that person. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at hidden polytheism in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
In a shift of policy, Moscow has spoken of deciding to deploy troops to the self-proclaimed People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk after recognizing the two breakaway regions. The move has drawn the ire of NATO and the West. The European Union is slapping a range of sanctions and activating a cyber response unit to help Ukraine deal with possible threats from Russia. Germany has announced taking steps to stop certifying the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, and the UK is also imposing sanctions on Russian banks. The Kremlin has brushed off threats of retaliation. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says that Russia is accustomed to sanctions. Now, let's go to Jerome Hughes in Brussels. Jerome, it looks like that Europe is thinking of slapping a whole range of sanctions on Russia.
That's right, Behrouz. Just in the past hour here at the European Commission building, Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the Commission, she gave a statement because EU foreign affairs ministers have been meeting all day to discuss this. And so now it seems that they're going to target the lawmakers in Russia who voted for this move, also other entities, financial institutions and individual companies as well. But I think those who are most critical against Russia will say for the measures being taken by the EU do not go far enough. But when I speak to an economist, they say that this idea that somehow the EU removes Russia from the SWIFT system, which is the financial system, it would be just too costly. It would be counterproductive. It would cost EU countries too much. You mentioned Nord Stream 2 as well. This is the gas pipeline that's running between Russia and Germany. It's brand new. It's ready to run. It's ready to go with approval, but on hold. So that's going to be very costly indeed for Germany. Germany needs this energy. I mean, we heard today, apart from energy, we heard that, you know, Russia exports like a huge amount of wheat and copper and other items like that. So if you introduce those type of sanctions that impact that, then it's going to cost EU nations. So that's why they're not going down that road. But on the issue of energy, we heard from the European Commission today that in terms of its gas reserves, in terms of its reserves of supply that it has, it only has 30% capacity at the moment. So that's quite low. But we're coming out of the winter, so it's not an immediate crisis. But what the Commission is saying, it needs to diversify. It needs to find other sources of energy. So it's looking towards Japan, to Qatar, to Azerbaijan, to Egypt, countries like that. But that's a very costly to import energy from those places. It has to come in by ship. And they've already taken in dozens and dozens of tankers so far this year to try and offset the the situation with Russia so that they're less dependent on Russia. But that's only a short-term solution because Russia has very cheap gas. The pipelines are already in place. So really, I think this story, Behrouz, is going to develop into one that is really all about economics because it's going to have a devastating impact on EU economies, not just on Russia.
Okay, thanks for that. Jerome Hughes, our correspondent in Brussels. Now, I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests joining us in tonight's edition. President of the American University in Moscow, Edward Lozansky, is joining us out of Moscow. Also, Next Century Foundation Secretary General William Morris is joining the show from Cornwall.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, now let me invite Edward Lozansky to begin with. Edward, good to have you with us. So my first question for you is, why do you think President Putin eventually decided to recognize these two breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine?
First of all, let me correct, I'm now in Canada. So in any case, I think what he did is, everyone's talking about Putin like grandmaster on the geopolitical chessboard, and he calculated all those risks. And what's happening is that Minsk agreements, which was agreed by everyone, I mean, United Nations, Washington, even Johnson, not great friend of Russia, kept saying that way to go. Ukraine, simply Zelensky, cannot even start implementing Minsk Accords because he will be swept away immediately. If he moves at least like one step toward doing this, and this means first point is to start direct negotiations with separatist republics. He'll be swept away by the street, by radical nationalists, some call them neo-Nazis. So he's scared, but blame goes on Russia. And all the shelling and the continuous killing of people in Donetsk area. At some point, there were also, everyone was talking about 150,000 Russian troops on Ukrainian border, but then no one was talking about a similar amount, if not larger amount, of Ukrainian troops on this border of Donbass and continuous shelling. And since Minsk agreement, more or less, Putin decided they're dead, then he decided to do the same thing he did in 2008 when Georgia was, started this campaign, military campaign, and attacked Russian peacekeepers. He recognized two provinces, Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and those two provinces live, I don't know if happy, but definitely they're safe. So. Okay. He repeated the same thing what he did in 2008, and he knows about sanctions, and apparently he thinks that Russia can live with them.
Okay. Now, William Morris is on joining us. Good to have you with us, William. So there are some observers who are arguing that it was the actions that the West took that pushed Moscow to recognize these two breakaway regions. Do you agree?
Well, not entirely, but yes, there are all sorts of issues here. But obviously, the West's failure to guarantee that Ukraine would not fall into the arms of NATO put Russia in an impossible position Ukraine is right underneath Belarus, right on the Russian border. So Russia had to assert itself. Now, the question is, its manner of asserting itself is a different matter, whether it takes all of Ukraine, takes part of Ukraine. It's already taken Crimea, of course. Interesting this situation all around Ukraine. We had a great war over Ukraine or over Crimea a couple of hundred years ago in the days of Florence Nightingale and the charge of the Light Brigade, and people died in their countless thousands for nothing. It was a squabble over who controlled the Christians of Jerusalem, ironically. So the Middle East came into it. Mm-hmm. And I hope we won't get there again. I don't think we will. I think common sense will prevail. So yes, in a sense, Russia has been provoked to take some kind of action. This particular action is a strategic ploy, I think, by Putin. It's the way he's playing the game. But overall, yes, Russia was put in a situation where it felt, understandably perhaps, it had to act.
Okay, Edward, Putin has been warning that NATO has put its frontline forces on this country's borders, and then he asked this question, against whom is this expansion intended? So did Russia feel threatened by NATO's presence at its doorsteps?
No. Of course, if you are surrounded with some NATO forces, and some of them have nuclear weapons, and if you look at the economic part of it, Russia is only maybe like a few percent of the United States and EU economy, and military budget also like maybe like 5% of the total. So the only thing that Russia can count now is nuclear weapons, supersonic weapons. So I think it feels pretty secure because he understands that the West is not suicidal. Putin said that if push comes to shove, he has no option. If Russia is threatened, its existence is threatened, he will use those weapons, and it means the end of the mankind of the planet. So at this point, hopefully, again, West is not suicidal. I don't think West is going to attack militarily Russia. So what West is doing is using Ukraine as a pawn in this geopolitical game, and this is unfortunate for me especially because I was born in Ukraine, and it's my native language. I still have a lot of relatives and friends. I see that my country, my home country, was turned into a pawn to serve as anti-Russia, to weaken Russia geopolitically, as Zbigniew Brzezinski wanted, and no one cares about Ukrainian people. They care is this to Russia, and I think today, by the way, today New York Times, which is not friend of Russia, Thomas Friedman article saying that West is at least partially, he's at least partially to blame. I think it's more than partial, because in 1998, when NATO expansion started this, what they call drunk Austin, this was a horrible mistake. It's not just my opinion. It's opinion of many American leading foreign policy experts, diplomats. Most outspoken was famous George Kennan, architect of the actual theory of containment and Cold War. He said that the most tragic, devastating foreign policy mistake of U.S., and George Kennan was supported by top academics and foreign policy experts. Actually, 19 U.S. senators voted against it, but was not enough to stop this madness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, William, Putin said that the West lied to Russia when it said it wouldn't expand toward his country's borders, and Moscow asked for security guarantees. They were rejected by the U.S. So was NATO expansion closer to Russian borders not an ill-considered decision?
The whole business of the way Ukraine's been handled by all sides has been ill-considered and clumsy. And there are all sorts of dangers. I mean, we see the real possibility that, from information we get from inside China, that China is considering if this does result in Russia's annexation of Ukraine, China is considering annexing Taiwan at the same time to use the opportunity. There's far less justification for that behavior, but if that takes place. But see, I was disturbed by our fellow speaker's comment on Putin's remark. I mean, if Putin is that much of a megalomaniac that he says he's happy to destroy the world, he's a complete idiot. And that is quite disgraceful if he comes out with that kind of crass remark. But basically, your underlying, because what but an obscene criminal could even contemplate using weapons of mass destruction? I'm sure Iran would never contemplate such a thing, nor would any sane person. But that aside, and that bizarre remark to one side, yes, NATO in a way provoked Russia. The whole, but it's more than NATO. It's the whole Western seduction of Ukraine. I mean, the European Union offered Ukraine $1 billion the other day in order to try and help it withstand Russia. The point is, I mean, the Germans today have just said that they will stop the new pipeline for the moment in order to support Ukraine. This kind of ratcheting up of the temperature has been going on. This seduction of Ukraine into the Western Bloc has been going on. It's very difficult for Putin to just ignore that. You can't ignore that kind of behavior. You are undermining his national security, and it's really is a difficult situation for Russia. But Russia, there's also a matter of pride. A lot of this is pride, but much of international affairs, much of the behavior of the West is based on pride. Russia cannot tolerate Ukraine falling into the Western Bloc, is my perception of it.
Okay.
And I understand the way Putin thinks. And he's in a position where he has to act.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edward, your reaction to William's comments?
No, first of all, I'm not really defending Putin 100%. When he said something about responding with nuclear weapons, it's only in the case of a similar attack from the West, and since West is more powerful, I mean, you know, 20, 30 times more powerful, it's the only weapon that he can use to protect his country. I don't think that anyone, I already mentioned that the West is not suicidal, and Putin is not suicidal, and definitely Russia. So at some point, we have to find some compromise, common sense. So far, I know that as we speak now, Biden is making his speech, and he will be talking about new sanctions. But still, there's some opening, maybe, since the meeting, as far as I know, meeting between Blinken and Lavrov, which was scheduled for day after tomorrow in one of the European countries, is not canceled. Also, there's still conversation about Biden and the Putin meeting. So our prayers and hopes that maybe we already were on the brink of nuclear war back in 62 during the Caribbean Missile Crisis. At that time, Kennedy and Khrushchev, they made compromise. Both sides made compromise. United States removed missiles from Turkey and then Italy, and Khrushchev moved missiles from Cuba. It's time to read maybe this history and do the same. Ukraine cannot be part of NATO. Now Ukraine is talking about building its own nuclear weapons. And if this happens, I don't know, will the U.S. support Ukraine become nuclear? I don't know. Looking at this political spectrum of in Congress, especially all the speeches, I don't see really any sense. The only senator is Rand Paul, who is making sense, 1 out of 100. The rest, they're still talking about global leadership, and it's the United States, it's a hegemon, and it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Everyone understands that it's different areas. There's no more hegemons. We have to find compromise, has to be a concert of nations, no single hegemony.
Okay. Now, William, the U.S. and its European allies regard Putin's recognition move as a dramatic provocation. Now, how do you see the role of the U.S. and the NATO in this escalation?
Well, it is. All these moves are provocations. The issue of offering $1 billion to Ukraine. Now, that's a provocation. Now Putin seizing these, recognizing these two states, it's a provocation. They're all provocation powers. Russia's a hegemonic power. Ukraine made a tactical mistake years ago, if you want to look at it just purely and without any idealism. Ukraine gave up. It had all the Russian nuclear weapons were in Ukraine. You remember Chernobyl is in Ukraine. Ukraine was the base for much of Russia's nuclear power. Ukraine gave up all of its nuclear. It's probably lamenting the day now because nobody would have touched it if it kept them. But it was an honorable thing to do to give up nuclear weapons, and nobody should have them, including Russia and including Britain and America. I mean, what's the point? The ridiculous approach to life to have rely on nuclear weapons. But that said, these things are provocations, and what we need is a little calm. Prevail, and we will see some common sense, and that the slated talks between Putin and Biden will go ahead, and that Putin will be given the kind of assurances that he needs, that the West will not take Ukraine into NATO, and then we could have all of this calm down. If not, the West's not going to go to war over Ukraine. The West will introduce more. These sanctions are cruel because they hurt the people, not the governments. Mm-hmm. We've seen their action in Syria. We've seen their action in Iran. Right. We've seen their action in regard to Yemen, in regard to so many situations. They hurt the ordinary people. It's the ordinary Russians that will suffer and right. are suffering, not the governments. And this is the gross irony of what is likely to happen as a this story affair.
Right. Now, Edward, the German defense minister says that Berlin might send additional forces to Lithuania in response to Russian actions. And, of course, this is on top of halting the Nord Stream 2 project. So how serious is Germany, and how long can it dispense with the Nord Stream project?
Well, the thing is that Germany is yielding its own interest to Uncle Sam. With Angela Merkel, she probably was much smarter. She knew she put interests of her country first. Olaf is too weak, I think, and maybe at this point, German people maybe should rebel, because for them, life will be much harder. Russia somehow will manage. Russian people are used to. You know, they never had a really very comfortable life, and they will somehow manage, especially having China on their side. And not only China, by the way. There's a group, I think Iran is part of it, it's a Shanghai Cooperation Organization. A Brazilian president, who is part of this BRICS group, was in Moscow. So Russia will not be absolutely lonely. Yes, Russian people will suffer. But, you know, this is the way to go. I don't see, again, I don't see any political class in the United States at this point which is ready for compromise. Okay. And just saying that Ukraine is no longer part of NATO would resolve the whole thing, but they don't want to say it just to save face. It's kind of stupid.
Edward, we have only 1 minute. I have one quick. Brief question for William. What do you expect would be in the offing, given the situation on the ground? Any room left for diplomacy? We have only 1 minute.
Yes, there's room. And as our colleague says, if the West says Ukraine will not be part of NATO, the matter is dealt with. There is room for diplomacy, and we need this summit to take place. God willing, it will do so. God willing, cool heads will prevail. If not, we're not going to see a major war in Europe, but we are going to see some unpleasant times, and we'll just have to endure them.
Right. Okay, and then we come to the end of this edition of The Spotlight. Let me thank our guests. We had the President of American University in Moscow, Edward Lozansky, in Quebec, Canada, and also Next Century Foundation Secretary General William Morris in Cornwall. I've been your host, Behrouz Najafi, and I'll see you next time.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned. In a beautiful hadith narrated by Shaykh al-Kulayni in Kitab al-Nikah, the main characteristics of the best women are enumerated. One of such traits is to be lovable to her husband and his family. Here, being dear does not mean to have love only in her heart. It means to have her love in her words and action too. Now, it is natural that a person loves her own family more. However, it is recommended to behave in such a way that both one's family and the family of the husband are respected and loved alike. Therefore, a wife, besides having children, being loved and being chaste, must act harmoniously in loving the husband's family. This type of harmony will cause dearness in the eyes of the husband and his family and will strengthen the affection and love among them. As a result, one of the best things to do to be more dear to one's husband is to have respect for the husband's family. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Ukraine crisis is entering a new phase as Russia recognizes the independence of two breakaway regions in eastern Ukraine.
I consider it necessary to make a long overdue decision to immediately recognize the independence and sovereignty of the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic.
Putin has also issued an order to deploy peacekeepers to Donetsk and Luhansk. Russia has already denied any plans to attack Ukraine or annex the two regions. The Russian president justified his decision by accusing the West of cheating Moscow and dishonoring their promise to stop NATO's eastward expansion.
They simply fooled us. We had five stages of NATO expansion, one after another. It has impacted very negatively on the nature of international relations and led to the loss of mutual trust.
Putin reiterated that Kyiv's admission to NATO would pose a major security threat to his country. The comments provoked Kyiv's reaction.
Ukraine unequivocally qualifies the recent actions of the Russian Federation as a violation of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of our state.
Hours later, the UN Security Council held an emergency meeting on the situation. Russia, Ukraine, and the U.S. clashed head-to-head at the meeting.
The internationally recognized borders of Ukraine have been and will remain unchangeable, regardless of any statements and actions by the Russian Federation.
What is more, this move by President Putin is clearly the basis for Russia's attempt to create a pretext for a further invasion of Ukraine.
We remain open to diplomacy for a diplomatic solution. However, allowing a new bloodbath in Donbass is something we do not intend to do.
Russia has warned Western powers to think twice and not worsen the situation, but the West's reaction was nothing other than critical remarks and threat of sanctions against Moscow. The Kremlin accuses Ukraine and the West of violating the Minsk agreements. It says the government in Kyiv is committing genocide in the Donbas region, while the West sends offensive weapons to the country. On the other hand, the West claims Russia intends to invade Ukraine. The Minsk agreements were signed in 2014 and 2015 to secure a ceasefire between the Ukrainian government and pro-Russian forces in the east of Ukraine. The Kremlin has repeatedly expressed concern about NATO's eastward expansion, demanding a ban on Ukraine's admission to the military alliance. So far, the U.S. and its NATO allies have only blown on calls by ignoring Russia's concerns and its requests for security guarantees.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip staged a sit-in to support Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails and detention centers. During the sit-in, people shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded the release of all Palestinian prisoners. Palestinian prisoners are political prisoners, and they are regarded as heroes and freedom fighters by all Palestinians.
The suffering of Palestinian prisoners has increased in recent months, especially following the Bold Escape operation in September. Prisoners, including women and children, suffer every day inside Zionist jails. The Zionist crimes against the prisoners must stop.
The sit-in comes at a time when hundreds of Palestinian detainees have been denied proper medical treatment in Israeli jails. Over 200 Palestinian detainees have died in Israeli prisons since 1967. During a press conference outside the Red Cross office, the Palestinian Ministry of Health condemned Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinian prisoners, especially those suffering from chronic medical conditions.
For Palestinian inmates, Israeli prisons serve as gateways towards their death because of medical negligence. Currently, there are 700 very sick Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli prisons without proper medical care. Those sick prisoners are dying slowly as the world watches in silence.
Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers where they are denied basic human rights. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas demanded international protection for Palestinian prisoners.
We call on the Red Cross and all international organizations to help Palestinian prisoners, especially those who are sick in Zionist jails. We demand international protection for Palestinian prisoners. They are suffering because of the racist Zionist practices.
People here are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, there are thousands of Palestinian prisoners suffering in Israeli prisons under inhumane detention conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The third edition of the annual conference on Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, dubbed General Soleimani and New Islamic Civilization. The conference was held online this time, with 50 scholars and political pundits from across the world giving speeches.
General Qasem Soleimani is a martyr, and he died fighting the head choppers and the throat slitters, and a brave, a charismatic leader. And we all honor his life.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism and the guarantor of regional stability. Should Iran and Russia have sat on their hands and not defeated the terrorists in Syria and Iraq, they would have had to fight them in their own soils.
We know that the U.S. and some other countries used terrorism under the banner of religion to topple the Syrian government and move the battlefield to Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, and the entire region. But Soleimani shattered all the U.S.'s calculations.
Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations.
The security of the Zionist regime is an important issue for all of the American governments. What General Soleimani did was to put Palestine in top of the Muslim world's priorities. And then he gathered and united all of the groups that opposed Israeli occupation as the resistance axis. This was the major motive for the U.S. to assassinate him.
Iran and Iraq have set up joint investigation committee on General Soleimani's assassination. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
Iranian and Iraqi judicial teams are seriously following up on a legal pursuit to bring the culprits to justice. Iraq is where the assassination took place and has so far kept close cooperation with Iran. In the four-day conference, we're also going to discuss legal dimensions of Soleimani's assassination.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists.
General Soleimani's assassination gave a clear clue about who is who in the fight against terrorism in the region. The United States killed the nemesis of Daesh, and that puts Washington on the terrorists' team. This as Iran is firmly following up on its legal pursuit to bring the perpetrators to justice, saying this is to make sure that such incidents will not happen again against Iranian military figures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
cleaning up the mess left behind by Storm Eunice that battered the UK this week. With record speeds of nearly 200 kilometers per hour, much of the country from Scotland to England felt the force of the storm's temper. Footage posted to social media showed trees fall, history be realigned, railway travel disrupted, planes struggling to land, iconic landmarks damaged. The capital, London, issued its first ever rat severe weather warning. Here, too, authorities asked residents not to leave home.
So the message to Londoners is, whilst the Met Office has the red weather warning, stay indoors. Storm Eunice is the worst storm we've faced in 3 decades. It's really important we don't inadvertently put ourselves in harm's way by being outdoors.
Many heeded the warning and stayed home. Others did not. 3 people were killed.
One of those killed, a woman in her 30s, traveling in a car with a man of the same age here in North London when this tree fell onto their vehicle, killing her but sparing her partner.
Eunice knocked out electricity for tens of thousands of households on its path. The government had already been warned that the UK lacks the resilience to deal with storms, particularly in terms of electricity infrastructure. Here in London, there is a sense of worry about what's to come next.
I guess you're just not really used to it happening, and I guess it's just one of those things that's going to happen more often, and we need to do more to be prepared to deal with them.
I'd say it's quite concerning, because it kind of makes me think of the bigger picture of where the entire climate is headed, where we're headed as a species. Everything was just in disarray. It was crazy and chaotic, and I know a lot of people felt scared.
Eunice was predicted to be the first storm in 30 years and certainly won't be the last. The clear-up phase is well underway now, but the wider debate about the state of the UK's resilience against storms is only just gathering pace. Saeed Pourreza, London.
On Friday, school pupils held protests in over 40 cities across Italy, demanding the government to put an end to obligatory work placements in the last 3 years of school. The demonstrations were staged after a student, 16-year-old Giuseppe Lenoci, died in a road accident on Monday while he was on board a truck for a school work internship. Last month, another student, 18-year-old Lorenzo Perrelli, was crushed to death by a steel girder of 150 kilos while working in an internship for a private company.
È una vergogna.
They should be ashamed. School principals should be reported to the authorities for striking deals with private companies without being provided assurances on working conditions in factories. They have been reckless and should be punished.
Lavoro non pagato, praticamente sfruttamento.
Schoolwork internship is equivalent to unpaid work. It is just another form of exploitation. In most cases, it doesn't give anything to students. It only helps companies make more profit.
About 3,000 students gathered in central Rome demanding the government to remove the education minister and scrap obligatory work experience programs for high school students introduced by former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi in 2015. In Turin, tension and anger went out of control when a group of students tried to break into the local headquarters of industrial employers group Confindustria and were repelled by police, with some batons being wielded, with at least 7 officers being hurt.
We are staging protests also to raise awareness over our living conditions as young adults. Our generation is suffering greatly also from the anti-COVID measures, which restricts our freedom to move, to interact socially. We are left alone with our phones following school lessons online, with our psychological scars, and the government is not doing anything to help us.
School dropout levels in Italy are among the highest in the EU, and due to the pandemic, with the government quickly deciding to make all learning remote. Also, the cases of social withdrawal and self-harm among young people are on the rise. Healthcare professionals are warning. In the past 2 years, and especially in recent months, Italy has been the scene of protests across the country. Rallies have been held against deteriorating living conditions, mandatory vaccination and health passes, as well as what the protesters describe as the government's mismanagement of the COVID pandemic. Max Civili, Rome.
Dozens of Nigerian Muslims, mostly supporters of prominent cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, demonstrated in Abuja to condemn Saudi Arabia for the war on Yemen and its continued blockade of the impoverished country. They said the bombing of civilian targets by the Saudi-led coalition and its siege on Yemen has caused a serious humanitarian situation there.
A coalition of Saudi Kingdom and that of United Arab Emirates, we are launching a strike on the innocent people of Yemen. They have been killing a lot of women, children, men, and everywhere, at their houses, at their business places, hospitals, schools, everywhere. Nowhere is safe in Yemen. They are killing, and the world is silent.
The Saudi war has escalated recently as Riyadh has intensified its aerial and ground attacks, worsening the humanitarian situation in Yemen. The protesters said the ultimate goal of Saudi Arabia is to reinstate the former Yemeni president.
They want to return Mr. Hadi back to power. You can't return somebody back to power with killing those people you want him to come and rule. You are killing them and you want him back to come and do what? What is he coming back to do? To come and rule who? Innocent people or dead bodies?
The protesters said human feeling should prevail over the intrigues of the power struggle on the situation in Yemen. They added that the senseless shelling of innocent civilians in Yemen must stop, while the international community has a moral responsibility to put a stop to the carnage. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
A new report, an assessment of the British government's widely criticized multi-million-dollar-a-year counter-extremism strategy known as PREVENT, first introduced after the 2005 London bombings.
The People's Review of PREVENT essentially puts forward the voices of those who have been impacted by PREVENT, as opposed to the government review, which is speaking primarily to people who are in receipt of PREVENT funding and essentially have a vested interest in having more PREVENT.
Millions of those funds are being injected into areas with 73% Muslim populations, codenamed PPAs, Prevent Priority Areas. The British government dismisses all criticism of its strategy and claims Prevent is a vital part of their counterterrorism work, which safeguards vulnerable people from being drawn into terrorism since 2012. The authors of the 65-page People's Review of Prevent think otherwise.
It hasn't been vital, and I think many people, not just community groups, not just human rights groups, but even members of parliament and UN special rapporteurs have put together criticisms and concerns about the fact that this could potentially be causing radicalization rather than stopping it.
Bearing the brunt of it all, Britain's Muslim community, children interrogated by PREVENT officers, at times without their parents knowing.
Over 50% of the referrals within PREVENT are of young people and children. That includes children as young as 4 and children at primary school. There's no possibility that they're at risk of being drawn into terrorist activities.
The review cites multiple examples of the devastation caused by PREVENT. The so-called Trojan horse affair is one. False reports in 2014 of an Islamist plot to take over schools in Birmingham, ending up ruining the lives and careers of dozens of school teachers.
The problem with the school was that it was a Muslim-led school, that it was a Muslim-majority school, and what was being built up, if that school had continued its successes, would be a group of Muslim-led schools within a Muslim-led academy trust. That was what was being broken up.
Despite its failures, though, there are now fears that the government here might be marketing PREVENT to other countries, some with questionable human rights records. The authors of People's Review of PREVENT and other critics say this strategy is racist, fuels and legitimizes Islamophobia, and therefore must be scrapped once and for all. Saeed Bourizza, London.
A dream has become a reality. The Conference of the Birds, composed by the brilliant young musician Mehsan Marvasti and inspired by a poem of the same name written by poet Attar of Nishapur in the 12th century, performed here in London. It's a story all Iranians are familiar with, about an epic journey to find the Simorgh.
The Simorgh is to the east what the phoenix is to the west, a mythical creature that symbolizes transformation. And the story of the Simorgh is a spiritual one, full of courage, determination, and self-discovery.
I think it's the first time I've seen so prominently advertised a non-Western musical traditional concert. And I've got a long-standing interest in music from the different parts of the Islamic world. It kind of evokes sort of deeper feelings, spiritual feelings. And the fact that this specific concert is about kind of a spiritual poem, it taps into something which I think a lot of us are looking for, especially in this post-pandemic, current pandemic situation. We're looking for some deeper meanings. So I think it will be striking a chord for a lot of people.
It's a mix of fusion of different music, and that's always interesting. And it's Eurasian music, and it uses different instruments from across Asia to represent birds, and it just sounded lovely. Even though there are differences, cultural differences between these places and these peoples, and those differences should be recognised in general, that through things like music and art, there can also be synergy, and things can work together as well.
5 years in the making, the Conference of the Birds, conducted by Farnoush Behzad, brought together musicians and instruments from across the world. It fuses Azeri, Chinese, Indian, Arabic, Afghan, Armenian and Persian music, brought to the audience by a Western orchestra. The performance was accompanied by two elocutionists who narrated the story and animated clips of birds and their migratory lives. The art and culture of Iran needs no introduction, renowned worldwide. But young Iranian artists living far from home are always looking for ways to capture the spirit of their homeland and offer Western audiences a taste of Iran. Bianca Rahimi, London.
In the limelight. Artificial intelligence has been identified as one of the top three emerging technologies in conservation, helping protect species around the world. We now present you an article written by Graham Green. The piece is titled Five Ways Artificial Intelligence is Saving Wildlife, from counting chimps to locating whales. There's a strand of thinking, from sci-fi films to Stephen Hawking, that suggests artificial intelligence could spell doom for humans. But conservationists are increasingly turning to artificial intelligence as an innovative technology solution to tackle the biodiversity crisis and mitigate climate change. A recent report by wildlabs.net found that artificial intelligence was one of the top three emerging technologies in conservation. From camera trap and satellite images to audio recordings, the report notes, artificial intelligence can learn how to identify which photographs out of thousands contain rare species, or pinpoint an animal call out of hours of field recordings, hugely reducing the manual labor required to collect vital conservation data. Artificial intelligence is helping to protect species as diverse as humpback whales, koalas, and snow leopards, supporting the work of scientists, researchers, and rangers in vital tasks, from anti-poaching patrols to monitoring species. With machine learning, computer systems that use algorithms and models to learn, understand, and adapt, artificial intelligence is often able to do the job of hundreds of people, getting faster, cheaper, and more effective results. Here are five artificial intelligence projects contributing to our understanding of biodiversity and species. 1. Stopping poachers. Zambia's Kafue National Park is home to more than 6,600 African savanna elephants and covers 22,400 square kilometers. So stopping poaching is a big logistical challenge. Illegal fishing in Lake Itezitezi on the park's border is also a problem, and poachers masquerade as fishers to enter and exit the park undetected, often under the cover of darkness. The Connected Conservation Initiative from Game Rangers International, Zambia's Department of National Parks and Wildlife and other partners is also using artificial intelligence to enhance conventional anti-poaching efforts, creating a 19-kilometer-long virtual fence across Lake Itezitezi. Forward-looking infrared thermal cameras record every boat crossing in and out of the park day and night. Installed in 2019, the cameras were monitored manually by rangers, who could then respond to signs of illegal activity. Forward-looking infrared artificial intelligence has now been trained to automatically detect boats entering the park, increasing the effectiveness and reducing the need for constant manual surveillance. Waves and flying birds can also trigger alerts, so the artificial intelligence is being taught to eliminate these false readings. Ian Hode, Special Technical Advisor at Game Rangers International, says there have long been insufficient resources to secure protected areas, and having people watch multiple cameras 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, doesn't scale. Artificial intelligence can be a game changer, as it can monitor for illegal boat crossings and alert ranger teams immediately. The technology has enabled a handful of rangers to provide around-the-clock surveillance of a massive illegal entry point across Lake Itezitezi. Two, tracking water loss. Brazil has lost more than 15% of its surface water in the past 30 years, a crisis that has only come to light with the help of artificial intelligence. The country's rivers, lakes, and wetlands have been facing increasing pressure from a growing population, economic development, deforestation, and the worsening effects of the climate crisis. But no one knew the scale of the problem until last August, when, using machine learning, the MAP Biomass Water Project released its results after processing more than 150